What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about some comics that came out this very day, and we have four of them for you. So let's get right into it. Not waste
Max
any time talking about the date, what's going on with the date, when we post the show. Don't waste any time at all.
We only have seconds to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, who even knows? Live every podcast like it's your last.
Carpe diem. Wow, oh, Captain, my Captain. We're all aging so rapidly.
I will go down with this ship. I won't put my hands up and surrender.
What is happening?
Yeah, I have no idea. But it's exciting. He's just getting Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're like, man, my life's over. This is how I want to go down.
Yeah.
Singing a little.
I will go down. You've never heard that song?
No. Is it the one with the dogs and stuff? Angel?
No, that's In the Arms of an Angel.
This is Chris's like,
oh, wow.
Real.
That's
me.
When I hear that song, I immediately know I have to change the channel because it's one of those sad songs where they're, you know, they show dogs that are like, you know.
Here's what I'm going to do. Is I'm going to take that song and I'm going to edit over exclusive deleted scenes from Punisher, and you're never going to know.
If we die at the end of this podcast, I'll go out happily knowing I got to hear you sing that beautiful piece of Angel.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that meant something to you.
Do you want to sing Send Me On Your Way, your favorite song from Rusted Root?
Send me on your way.
Look at that. He's laughing. Look how happy he is.
So happy right now.
I can't believe you just said that. It's such a random song.
But you
like
love
90s.
It. You love
brings
it.
Brings me back
Do
to high
school.
Do you
want to sing Semi-Charm Kind of Life?
Oh, man. When I'm with you, I feel like I could die, and that'll be all right. All right.
Oh, wow.
We've got four comics to talk to you guys about today. Two titles from DC, two titles from Image. Here they go. Sideways number one, Dark Knights Rising, The Wild Hunt number one, Kick-Ass number one, and Death of Love number one. So let's kick it off with Dark Knights Rising, The Wild Hunt number one. This is by a bunch of dudes, Scott Snyder and Grant Morrison mainly, but also James Tynion IV, and I think Josh Williamson is the fourth writer on it. This is tying into the overall Dark Knights event. This is kind of an essential chapter. It's surprising some of the stuff that happens in here that is not in the main title. But this whole event has been inspired by a lot of stuff that happened during Grant Morrison's run on Batman, as well as Final Crisis, which was his bananas event that he wrote for DC.
Yeah.
So to bring him back for this makes a lot of sense. And you can kind of tell which portions he wrote of the book, I think.
Interesting. Are you talking about the one with the ship made of sound?
Yep.
You think that's Grant Morrison?
Yeah, the Ultima Thule.
Yeah.
Can you guys help me out? I am so fucking lost now in this whole metal thing. Like, I don't understand what's going on. I was very excited to see Raven, but then the monkey stuff, and I in like a ship of sound. I am completely lost.
That's right where you're supposed
heads
to
or
be.
Tails of anything that's happening.
So this is, as we said, like a very Grant Morrison thing. And what's happening here is that we find out the origin of Detective Chimp, who is this classic DC character. And the very Grant Morrison thing, I think the most Grant Morrison thing about this book is that he's like, oh, Detective Chimp, that's DC. So clearly he's the storyteller of the DC universe and holds all of its knowledge. And whatever is happening to the DC universe is reflected in Detective Chimp, which feels like a very Morrison meta move.
To declare an arbitrary fact and then build a whole story around it?
Yeah, something like an alliteration or something that was a mistake that somebody made back in comics, or somebody was like, I'm on deadline, I have to turn in 36 comics in 5 minutes. And then he's like, well, here's a story reason for this.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, I love Detective Chimp. I love the fact that we get to spend some time with him. I like the fact that his mental state is reflecting what's happening to the DC universe.
Yeah.
And also that ends up tying into this thing that Grant Morrison set up both in Final Crisis and Multiversity, where all the different 52 different universes are on different harmonics of sound. So Detective Chimp, DC, it's the notes D and C over and over and over again. My biggest problem, though, is that take on the DC universe, I think, conflicts with what Scott Snyder has been doing by building up all this metal stuff.
Right.
Like, the theme, this is so silly to talk about, it feels like, but the theme of Dark Knight's metal is metal. Like, it's that all of these different metals are the basis of the DC universe, and he's doing a very Grant Morrison thing where he's taking all these different mystical metals that have different properties and coming up with a story and a connection and a reason for them. But then Grant Morrison's like, oh, no, it's actually music. And they managed to make it work together.
But
like,
they talked about music in the last issue of this madness, though. It wasn't just this issue that Grant Morrison brought up.
I know. I think because they were setting it up a little bit. Okay. He's still playing with the stuff. But all the stuff like the Ultima Thule comes from Final Crisis. The, what do they call it? The Hall of Heroes.
Yep.
That also is, and the Wild Hunt. That's, Wild Hunt is actually from Multiversity. Is that right?
I believe so. I mean, it's been used a bunch in different types of stories, I think. But
all right. What did you think of this book? I'm talking a while.
I liked it. I agree. It had the some of the Grant Morrison-y stuff. I'm like, all right. Because I just want to see the story a little bit, especially when this one does feel like an essential part of it. And this whole crossover has been a little bit coy with what's happening. So we do get some information. Everything has been a trap always in this story so far. So that's a little crazy. I'm ready for them to start turning it around. And I thought it was coming in this issue, but then once again, it was not.
Yeah, it does. My problem with the traps right now is they feel written to me.
Yeah.
Like, they did a bunch of things, and then I feel like this is what I used to do when I would play with my toys as a kid, right? Where there'd always be one toy that was always my villain toy, and all the other toys would get together and be like, we're going to stop you, villain toy. And then whatever they did, the villain toy would be like, ha ha, this was all part of my plan the entire time. Ha ha. Whatever I did, and I was just improvising as I was playing. And this feels the same way, where it doesn't necessarily feel like, okay, they planned all these steps in the Batman Who Laughs and Barbatos' plan, and then figured out how to get the heroes to hit those different notes. There's more of the heroes are doing this stuff, and then the Batman Who Laughs comes in and is like, fell into my trap, boys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like it feels like the story of a simple-minded Alex Albin.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Yeah.
No, but I agree with you. It does feel a little bit like it's so specific with like, yes, the Flash, Raven, and whatever are on the music ship, and of course we'll turn that into the dart that will destroy it. It's like, what? How? You couldn't have predicted any of this. Like, how do they predict this? That's what it does feel very writerly. When it's more fun if they're, like, in the moment taking advantage of these heroes. It makes them more powerful because they are able to see a situation, and because they're all Bruce Wayne's, the greatest detective in all of the universe, they're able to out-reason them in the moment rather than, like, just following a plan that some other dude wrote. Eons ago,
right,
or whatever.
Okay, you all fell for our 364 part plan.
Yeah, I know,
you guys.
It's like, what?
idiots.
So that's crazy.
I agree with you. I think what is missing a little bit from this event is that there are all of these dark Batmans taking on the DC universe, but they're only kind of acting like Batman.
Yeah.
Kind of. And I know they all have their own thing, but.
Well, then this was the first issue where we got to see a little bit of them interacting. So I thought that was cool. I liked when Red Death turned back into Perry Allen. I thought that was cool.
I keep waiting for them to settle down so I can try to grasp what's happening. More and more new characters keep getting introduced, and it's just I can't follow all the madness that's happening, and it's driving me insane. The only two things that I enjoyed from this book was the fact that it was called Riders on the Razor, which I believe is a nod to AC/DC's Razor's Edge, and then the fact that Raven was badass. I was like, great.
Yeah, well, you love
Other than that, this is fucking insane shit that I can't even follow, and I have been reading comic books for most of my life.
That's why you can't follow it. Your brain is pudding.
Yeah.
And I say this as a fellow pudding brain.
Yeah, man, I'm pudding.
Yeah.
I'm pudding.
The art is mostly great, and the action is crazy, and if you're looking for a bunch of Morrison insanity, I think this is more of that. So I had fun reading the book, even though it does feel like a little bit much at this point.
Especially the reveal at the end that there's a 53rd universe that's all chimps, and now they're the ones that are going to save the day.
I mean,
it's
I love
like,
that.
It's just like, what? Let the heroes do it.
Yeah.
Like, why do we have to have...
It keeps getting more and more insane. I'm like, I need it to stop.
I'm looking forward to how they tie this up, if at all, in the last issue.
How can you at this point?
All right, let's move on. Talk about Kick-Ass number one for Miller World. It's Miller time, you guys.
It's Miller time.
Nobody knows. But Kick-Ass is back, and the twist is she's a black lady.
Yeah! That's awesome.
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I've never been a huge Kick-Ass fan, but this was a good story. It's classic Mark Miller where it's just like, oh, she just beats everyone up.
Yes.
Like, this was so dangerous and like crazy.
Here's what I liked about this book. If you divorce it entirely from all of the previous Kick-Ass series and ignore those completely.
Which was easy to do because it has nothing to do with it except for the uniform.
Exactly. It's about an ex-soldier who comes home to the worst situation possible. She's out of money. She's out of options. So, of course, she decides to go after the mob. Yeah. That's pretty much the story. It's very straightforward, but John Romita Jr. draws the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And that's great, and that's fun. The thing that makes no sense is why she puts on the Kick-Ass uniform, because it does exist in the Kick-Ass universe. And for some reason, she's like, oh, cool. I want to dress like a teenage boy.
Yeah, it's weird. Doesn't fool anyone. They're like, hey, who's this girl? So it's like, what is it?
And they immediately take off her mask, which it turns out was her plan the entire time. And she's like, she's a mom. So now the mob can identify her, which clearly is going to play out of the series when they come back to take revenge on her or whatever. But these are fun. Most of Millar's stuff is very turn off your brain, just enjoy it. It's a big action movie. Pete, you sound like you were into this.
Oh, man, it was so great. I loved every moment of it. It was so enjoyable. And I like the idea of like, okay, somebody's back against the wall. You have to, what are you good at? Well, I'm good at beating the shit out of people, so that's what I'm going to do. And what a great world for her to do that in. And there's plenty of bad guys for her to thrash. And it is. It's a fun popcorn movie where you just turn off your brain and be like, let's see some violence.
Let's see some violence. Yeah, I feel like this is like, I did like the story, and I like the way we meet this soldier, and she comes home and everything sucks. That part was cool, and then got into the stuff where I was like, this doesn't make sense anymore. So I feel like it's classic Miller where it's like half good and half not good.
Yeah, but that said, I feel like I'll keep reading it because it is fun and it is easy and it's enjoyable.
And the art is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our next book. This is a new DC Comics book called Sideways Number One, and Paul Giamatti is finally a part of the DC Comics universe.
Oh, I wish.
I am so excited.
I wish.
I never thought I would read that many pages on a Pinot Noir in a DC comic.
Oh, man. Exactly. Finally, Merlot is out and Pinot Noir is in.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah. Batman saying, I like it because it's noir, was pretty cool.
It made a lot of sense. I can't wait for the crossover.
Yeah. Now, why do you think they decided to continue the story of Sideways in a DC comic book? How do you think they came around to that decision?
Young people love the movie Sideways. They love Paul Giamatti. They love Thomas Hayden Church's earlier work. And they just love wine. Young people are buying wine. And it's crazy. Yeah,
I guess now that I think of it, they just spinning out of Dark Knight's Metal. They have that Wings comic book,
which I have been anticipating for years. Huge. Finally, we get to see season 11 of Wings done in the DC universe. What a great pickup!
Spinning out of metal. That's nuts.
What did you guys really think of this book, please?
It's not that. I don't know. This feels like a million. I don't know what this is yet.
So the premise of this book is a kid develops powers in DC Metal. He falls through a building into another world, and then can suddenly like jump through space, basically,
right?
And time potentially. In the issue, we like meet his life, and we see that he's in trouble with the space time overlord. But I agree. I feel like we've seen this story so many times. What is special about this story? And it seems like, so far, not much.
And also the fact that he's really into taking selfies when he's supposed to be doing other things drives me insane.
It definitely, and I say this as an extremely old white man, definitely feels like, how do fellow kids to me when I'm reading this book? Yeah. Where like, what up? I'm just hanging at my high school, going to take some selfies at YouTube.
And that's what I don't understand about this new relaunch that DC's doing with all these new characters. It's like, make them unique, make them special. Yeah. Like, what is going to make any reader be like, finally, this story?
And he also, Did you guys, what was it called? Rampage? Not Rampage.
Silencer?
Well, there was, so, okay, here's what they have so far. They have Rampage, who's a guy who's kind of like the Hulk, but not exactly.
Yeah.
They have Silencer, who's kind of like the Punisher, but not exactly. And now they have this dude, who definitely doesn't have the same powers, but almost looks exactly like Spider-Man.
Yes, he looks like Spider-Man.
Which is weird.
And he's a young, yeah, it's weird. It's like,
to me, reminds me a little bit of Flash.
It feels like a cross between Spider-Man and Flash.
Yeah. I'm just saying the costume.
Yeah, but it doesn't get to say anything. I don't know. I feel like...
I like the idea of the power. The power is basically he can create splits in the universe and instantaneously travel from one place to another.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun. The art by Kenneth Rockford is
amazing.
Really good. It's good superhero art. But yeah, there's not much of a reason to pick out these books.
I tried to read that book twice. And I really had a hard time with it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's mainly a bummer because I really would like this relaunch to work, and I would love to see just more new characters from DC Comics. But so far, this is not quite it. Last one to talk about, Death of Love, number one from Image Comics. Pete, you were a big fan of this one.
Yes. You know, I think this was a great kind of classic Image book where you have... really amazing art, kind of like an honest storytelling, got a little heart in there. You can kind of relate to a dude trapped in the friend zone and trying to do all this stuff so he can get the woman, and he's failing miserably, but you can kind of get on his side.
Yeah,
this felt sort of, I liked where it ended up, but I was like, let's get to the fun part, because it was a lot of like, these dudes are sad, and I was like, I know sad dudes, I get it, like, let's move on, and get to the, they take a drug, and they can, this guy can suddenly see Cupids, basically, making people fall in love. Yeah, that's a fun premise, like, just get, I wish they got
I think
to
that's
it
why it started there and then ended there.
You know what I mean? I agree with you, though, that... the art is very fun in the book. The concept is very fun, but it spent a lot of time introducing the supporting cast that doesn't play into the first issue at all.
And they don't seem like characters that you love. They're like sort of jerks.
Well, kind of the dude you can kind of relate to. I mean, it's a classic scenario of like, you have a girl.
Here's
what
I'm saying is, so we meet the guy, we meet his roommate and best friend. I think it's his roommate. We meet the girl that he's in love with who just looks at him as a friend. Then, for some reason, they go to a misogyny seminar, like a how to get chicks seminar. That doesn't work at the bar. He's at the bar with two other characters and offered these pills by the devil that allow him to see Cupids and understand love. They could have just started in the bar, and that would have been fine.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. And but I think that's what you're saying.
When I took that pill and started seeing Cupids, it's stressful. So I'm looking forward to the second issue.
Oh, wow. Is that how you got your wife?
Exactly. You got Cupids swarming around you right now, Pete. So,
oh, man.
Watch out. Valentine's Day is coming.
Woo! In fact, it's today if you're listening to today. But again, the dates don't matter. If you like this show and other shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show in New York every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the Pit Loft. So come on down and we'll yell at you about some comic books. Pete, what do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about all the amazing guests we have coming up on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at comicbooklive.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com, and we will see you next week.
Keep living that semi-charmed kind of life.
In the art.